welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horik and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys in the Netherlands.
Welcome, Ross Jenkins. Ross from Digital Me, based out of Valencia. Could you introduce yourself, Ross?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So obviously I'm Ross. The company I own is called Digital Me. We specialize in building email marketing systems that tell a story. They lead generate, they save time, and they make your life one step easier. Email marketing isn't just about spamming. It's about telling a story that people love. We believe database is the biggest asset to a business. So why aren't most businesses utilizing it?
Before we're going to talk about that story, we want to hear about your story, because to me you sound pretty English, and still you're based out of sunny Valencia. How did you end up in Valencia?
Sure. So I own businesses on and off since I was 14. I'd buy a business, I'd put my marketing and put optimization into it, and then I'd end up selling it. And I've done this for many years until the sort of demise of e-commerce in that sense. Of buying and selling. I moved to Valencia 2.5 years ago, not because of the job opportunities, unfortunately, more so about the way of life. And instead of working 30 hours every 2 or 3 days, more so working less hours, but using your brain more productively, really. And the Spanish way of life seems to do that quite nicely.
Good, good. Well, that's. I think a lot of listeners would like to try that out as well. So, having that said, you are doing a lot of email marketing, and we're going to talk today about the building of your dream list, your dream database. What's your experience in building databases? How do companies build their database? And how should they do that?
Sure. So currently, a lot of companies build their database just by newsletter and by people purchasing an item from them. But what they always miss out is a personalization point. If I'm going to send you an email and it just says hi and goes on to me trying to sell you 101 products, the interest level is going to be really low. Whereas if I say, hi, Jeff, my name's Ross. I've been working on building, say, for instance, custom PCs for over 10 years, and I put my story and my passion into it, you're more likely to buy from me, because when you buy from a company, you're buying from the person. So you need to be able to understand your audience, and I think that's one of the biggest points.
So email's not dead.
Email's definitely not dead, is it?
You hear a lot of people saying that, or that's maybe a little bit provocative, in blogs and so, but mainly I think if you think that email is dead, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, if you look at what I do, is I subscribe to as many newsletters, as many companies as possible, and I'll go through their emails at sort of 9 or 10 in the morning, and I'll read what some of them are doing. Like companies like Boohoo Man, which are based in England, their emails are fantastic. They're not a storytelling company, but if you look at how they target you, and they're not sloppy in any way possible. Whereas you've got other companies that are very standardized, they're boring emails, and I open them and I instantly click delete. But understanding emails and understanding how other companies are doing them, it's not copying. You're taking points from this company, you're taking points from that company, and you can build your own database, your own dream list of people who want to buy from you.
Very often the email is regarded as like a messenger.
Yeah.
Therefore bringing to a other link or a website or a link for a download. But I've noticed in several podcasts I've been listening about email marketing that the email itself is becoming much more valued content. Is that something that you also see?
Yeah, for sure. What we're cutting down on is actually sending links out. As much as we love sending links out and, you know, sending people to 101 pages, that's not in fashion anymore and it doesn't work anymore. And it's Google's getting smarter. It's starting to realize that you're doing that and you'll end up on the spam list. So what we're doing is we're actually getting people to engage with our emails more. So instead of saying, hey, buy my item via this link here, we're actually saying reply to it and we'll have a chat about what your business needs are. And we're finding pretty good conversion rates in terms of that, in regards to cutting out links and cutting out sending people to different pages. Tools like Google, Hotmail, they're going to start cutting down on them eventually.
So let me take it one step back here, because before sending out those emails and try to find the engaging content, you first have to build that list. Do you have some tips for listeners on how to build the list? Because that in this, let's say, GDPR times, it seems pretty difficult to start building a list. Do you have some tips there?
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot harder now GDPRs came to play. Obviously, that changed a lot of email marketing. One of the best and the most simplest way to get people to opt in is a newsletter on the bottom of your website. Get people to opt in via that, and you can eventually build them into, you know, someone who's a fan of your company. The second best thing, personally, I think, is a landing page. Landing pages are fantastic because they only have a simple amount of content. They're not going to have a huge amount of images. And there's a button to opt in. They don't have to purchase there or then. I think one of the biggest issues with companies nowadays are they think people are going to buy on the first sight of looking at the product, whereas that's not true anymore.
Well, it's not true with dating also. So why should why should be with email?
Yeah. Well, I recently read an article on the Think with Google blog. About the average number of touch points people have before buying something. And my attention was caught there when I saw this 19-year-old a guy that was buying a headphone and had over 375 touch points before buying that headphone. 375 touch points before buying a headphone. So obviously what you're saying is completely right. People don't buy the minute they see your product, of course, and still a lot of marketers assume so.
Exactly, there's a lot of different points that people go to. They compare the market, they look at testimonials. A lot of people look at likes as well, which is why Instagram and Facebook are removing likes right now, to see how that works. But then you also come to people who buy on impulse, but that's a lot lower than, you know.
Yeah. Of course. So have you, speaking about Facebook and Instagram, have you used social media or maybe paid social media campaigns to generate email addresses or people that subscribe to your lists?
Yeah, for sure. So there's two different ways you can do it. Obviously, you can send them to a landing page, or what we found better is using Facebook's inbuilt opt-in form. It converts a lot cheaper. We're not sure on the reason. You could have the exact same ad copy. Facebook just prioritizes the opt-in form.
Would you say that what you're referring to is a lead gen, right? Like a lead gen ad?
Yeah.
The lead forms that Facebook has?
Exactly.
We've kind of a similar experience there. I think, yeah, of course, you know, it's the same content, but it's pretty easy for people to get a download or do a subscription because they don't have to fill in anything, of course. So we've seen similar stuff. And also what you're referring to, the algorithm gives priority to those kinds of ads. So
exactly.
That's the business they're in, right? Selling ads, the more clicks they generate, the more revenue they get.
But I think that people also like to stay, like the social media is a place of their choice. And if you redirect them to another place, that be it a landing page or another website, you're sending them away from where they wanted to be. So if you do something and you can do everything within that place that they want to be, I guess that will be a more pleasant experience for them.
Yeah, exactly. And that you're taking them away from that trusted point. You know, they trust Facebook, they trust Twitter. But do they know your company? Probably not. So I think that's a big point. Another thing a lot of people mess up on in terms of opt-in pages is they never give something for the information. So say, for instance, if I wanted you guys to opt into my landing page or my Facebook opt-in form, I have to give you something in return for you to opt in. So maybe I give you a sample letter, or I give you a free t-shirt. A lot of people mess up on not giving anything. They just expect people to opt into their form where they don't know them or anything like that.
Okay. So once we've taken that hurdle of getting people to subscribe to our list, what's the next thing we should do in order to come to a dream list?
Sure. So the best thing is to introduce yourself, your business, and even introduce your staff. A huge asset of your business is your staff, if of course you have any. So I feel that introducing yourself and letting people know the products that you offer, you're not going to be hard selling them. Don't expect to make a sale overnight. More so, you're selling yourself to them so they can invest in your product later down the line.
So here we come a little to the tools, the tech tools or MarTech tools that could be used in this case, because what you're referring to is like a welcome series or something similar, or onboarding series, as we call them. What kind of tools do you use to achieve, let's say, those or arrange those campaigns?
Sure. So depending on your budget and the specifics that you need, say either ActiveCampaign or Infusionsoft are the entry level kind of CRM tools, and then you've got things like HubSpot or Salesforce, depending on how many contacts or the kind of tools that you need.
Mm-hmm. So, and what about like tools like MailChimp? Because MailChimp's website also claims to have marketing or email automation. Sure. Where's the difference between what a campaign monitor or MailChimp does compared to what an automation tool like Infusionsoft or ActiveCampaign or the HubSpot or whatever do? What's the difference between those tools?
Sure. So I find emailing through MailChimp or Mailshake versus Infusionsoft or ActiveCampaign, obviously the first thing you'll notice is a price point of view. It's not a huge difference, but Infusionsoft and ActiveCampaign come about $50 a month, whereas MailChimp and Mailshake are the lower end of that. The next big difference is the send rate. In terms of if you send 1,000 emails via Mailshake or MailChimp, you're looking at, let's say, 450 to 550 people being able to see that, whereas Infusionsoft and ActiveCampaign, they have an SLA, which is it'll always give you around 99 to 98% send rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there also a difference in functionality apart from price?
Yeah, for sure. Infusionsoft and ActiveCampaign have a huge amount of functionality. They're based solely around email marketing, whereas HubSpot and Salesforce start branching out a bit more. In terms of the functionality, Infusionsoft and ActiveCampaign, they work on logic basis. You can have landing pages on both of them as well. They have a lot more functions. And they're a lot easier to use.
So what we usually compare it and explain is that if you're using a marketing or email marketing tool like MailChimp or ActiveCampaign or whatever, like similar solution, that's fine for sending emails. And but it's also limited to sending emails. So if you're sending emails, you will get all kinds of nice reports on how people behaved on clicking behavior or opening behavior, how many people unsubscribed or even put you on a spam list or whatsoever. But yeah, That's the information you get. Once you start using marketing automation, the behavior that people show apart from that email, so on your website, on social media, maybe even within advertising campaigns, is something that's also being tracked by a solution like HubSpot or Acton or Marketo, Infusionsoft, those those are basically multi-channel automations. So you could combine profile data, in which we mean data that's in your CRM or data that people filled out in forms.
Yep.
You could combine that with behavioral data. It's like what kind of parts of the website did they click on? How long did they stay on the website? What kind of words did they use within Google Ads that made them land on your website? How many forms did they fill out, et cetera? That kind of behavioral things can be combined. And that's where the personalization basis is, right?
Yeah, for sure. The reports are a lot more heavy in terms of the further up you go.
So talking about personalization, could you share some best practices in personalization? Because you have obviously tried a lot of stuff out. Probably you failed at some stuff. So what are the best practices on personalization?
Sure. So never send an email without first name field. Obviously, even GDPR, you should have had the first name field anyway. The second big thing is stick to not having huge banner ads with your logo. Now, this is one of the biggest pet peeves. You're not a big brand. You're not Coca-Cola. You don't need a big image at the top saying what your logo is. Instead, have copy where people can read and understand your business. Don't use their info or contact email. You want to be as personal as possible. You're a small business. You want people to buy from you, not just your business. And the next big thing is have clear call to actions. If you are going to have a link, make it obvious that it's a link and allow people to purchase through it. I mean, some of the things that people are looking to, you know, achieve out of an email is building trust, credibility, and building people who want to buy. So that comes on to sort of the next thing, which is filtering your list.
Okay, so marketing automation is about sending the right message to the right people at the right time. That's what we always claim, and that's what we've said in multiple podcasts. So how does marketing automation help you to achieve that goal? So how do you send out like one newsletter to all the same people, to the whole marketing list, or do you use different segments? And if so, how do you do that?
Sure. So we use logic-based. So depending on the tags that you have, if you're interested in social media selling, or depending on what you're interested in, we'll send you a different newsletter per se. If you show no interest at all, if you don't open the past 5 emails, I'm going to remove you from my CRM. The reason we do this is because every contact costs us money. Costs money to store in a CRM. It essentially takes up time out of your staff or your hands.
Okay, so what you're saying is if they didn't open your email for 5 times, you're removing them from your list.
Correct.
Okay.
On an external list, if you've purchased, we'll always keep your data, but it won't be inside of our CRM. It'll be in a Google spreadsheet.
Okay. What made you decide on specifically 5 times? Because from what I've seen, and I always take an example from, let's say, the airline newsletters that I get from KLM, Royal Dutch Airlines. I'm subscribed to their newsletter. They send me a newsletter every week or multiple times a week. They exist over their 100-year celebration is this week, so I probably received like 5 email newsletters from them, which I did not open because the reason I'm subscribed is that I'm always waiting for their offers. They have like specific periods in which they have those offers and send them out by emails. But I might not open 10 or 20 emails from them. So is that something like a rule of thumb that you do, or is this based on experience? Why is it that 5 times?
It's based on experience. We're trying to build a dream list of people. And instead of having 100,000 people in your database and a 1% open rate, would you rather have 1,000 people in your database who want to buy, who are eagerly waiting to buy a product from you? Or would you rather have 100,000 people with less than 1% who want to buy from you?
Okay, so it's about quality, not quantity.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what you do is, in a very early stage, you separate the raving fans from the zombies.
Exactly. And I mean, you come back to the cost basis as well. The price to hold 100,000 people in your database is, you know, it's a petty sum. Whereas the cost to hold 1,000 people in your database is very little, which allows you to be more targeted, more segmented, because we don't all have 100 people in our team to be able to market the different, you know, there's 1,000 different ways I could target. Instead, I can prioritize the main things and go from there.
Well, what we've noticed with the GDPR, because that was a huge thing in 2018, but we've heard that from several customers that they slashed their marketing list, mailing list, and get rid of all the ones, what I call then zombies. They're not doing anything. And with 75% less context, they actually generated more engagement and more response and even revenue from that list that was 25% of the original list. So I guess that getting rid of the zombies is not only good for your paying the context for your CRM and your marketing automation, but it also improves the overall effect of your mailing list.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it comes back to the point of having 100,000 people on your database is fantastic. But once you get down to nitty and gritty people, you realize there's not a whole lot of people who are, you know, raving fans. So if you focus specifically on raving fans and give them good quality content, it'll achieve a lot more.
I've got another curious question. It's more about the content part for emails. The all these tools give you the possibility to make great looking mails. You got this. You already mentioned about the logo, but you can have a header image, and you can make blocks, and you can make big buttons, and you can do a lot of stuff with it. But I also own several mailing lists of very of companies that are very focused on conversion, and they send me mails that look, there are automated mails, but they look like mails from Outlook or Gmail.
Like plain text emails. Yeah.
So what's your opinion on that?
I think the text-based emails are fantastic. They work, especially for things like asking them to reply to emails instead of going to links. And I'm sure they have pictures of themselves and it looks like it's coming from a genuine person. Whereas you, because you're in this sort of area, you already know that it's automated. Those emails are fantastic. And until you get to a big company, you can always use text-based emails for those kind of things. They convert really well. They look really good. They don't take a whole lot of time to build. And you can tell a story through it. Whereas I know images, you can tell stories through, but how long are you going to view an image for, or a video or a GIF? Telling a story works a whole lot better, and people have a lot more time for text-based emails right now.
Okay, so taking it a little back on, we were talking about those email lists of 100,000 people on the list. Mark here is referring to customers and the GDPR compliancy, etc., which made a lot of customers of ours go back from 100,000 to 5,000 or 10,000 in their mailing list.
Yeah.
The problem that a lot of marketers had there was that they were being judged internally, or they had to justify themselves by the number of emails they have on their list. So their main KPI for email marketing was the number of subscribers. So obviously that's not the KPI you want to be after anymore, but what do you suggest would be the best KPIs on email marketing? So what should marketers be measuring when they're sending out emails?
Sure. So marketers should be looking, instead of looking at the number of people on your list, instead open rates, if your current open rate is 10%, maybe look again at 11 or 12%. Your click rates, they should be going up. But also a lot of people don't look at things like bounce rate on the website. Things like that should always be looked at. Rather than just the email numbers, you should be looking at the bounce rate, how long people are looking on the website, maybe even the average purchase. There's a lot of different metrics that you guys should be looking at instead of just looking at how many people are subscribed to the specific list.
So what we usually do within marketing automation, we add UTM tags there, and we specify campaigns in which we measure all the attribution. So if a purchase in the end is done, or someone in B2B, it could be make an appointment and a sales op is being generated in CRM, all those results had touch points before getting that result. So the attribution is being measured by how much every touch point contributes to that end result. And email marketing is very important there as a first point of touch point. Do you measure those results? Do you put in those? Are you using UTM tags there? And are you using Google Analytics to measure anything there in results? Or are you doing all in the marketing automation tool?
Sure. So Google Analytics is fantastic because it's a free tool from Google. You're obviously really credible in this niche already. So we always use UTM tags, and we'll use Google Analytics. We'll make filters using Google Analytics to be able to sort of work out all the reports we need to be able to go back and say, okay, cool. So not only is our click rate improved, but also they're staying on the web page longer, they're purchasing more, the average sale has gone up. Google Analytics is amazing for that kind of things.
So in the end, it's as Mark sometimes states here, it's about revenue marketing. Marketers should always be measuring the revenue that came out of this specific email campaign. And in practice, I hardly see anyone doing that. Yeah, of course, the big Amazons, etc., are all doing that, but yeah. Like the average.
We're doing it.
Yeah, of course we're doing it. But I would say that the average small or medium-sized company doesn't even think about that. So that would be a thing that we always stress on in email marketing. Do measure your revenue and attribution from your email campaigns.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's something that a lot of people miss. And they think that maybe their end goal will eventually, it will start generating revenue. But instead, people are understanding your name. And email marketing is a performance marketing measurement. It's very easy to get the numbers out of email marketing as well. It's a simple task, but I mean, it will save you a lot of time in the long run if you start looking at it today.
So have you used this, because this brings me to the fact that you're using multiple measuring software tools like analytics, you're using your marketing, email marketing or marketing automation tool for specific KPIs. Have you got any experience in combining that into a real-time dashboard online?
We haven't done that in the past. We've done it for HubSpot, stuff like that. But in terms of Active Campaign and Infusionsoft, they're still a little bit behind in that sense. Obviously, HubSpot dashboard is fantastic. It can integrate with a lot of aspects. And we use that quite a lot for a lot of our customers.
I would definitely look at using, for example, tools like Clipfolio or Google Data Studio to combine that data, because I don't know exactly about Infusionsoft or ActiveCampaign, but I'm pretty sure that you can use that data, combine it with Google Analytics and maybe Google Ads, because that's also where you have like conversion measurement, etc. And you can combine it into one real-time dashboard with Clipfolio or even Google Data Studio. So that's what we've seen, because the metrics that you get or the results that you get from Google Analytics are on an aggregated level. So you see the number of sessions, you see the average time they were on your website, the number of pages that people have looked at, etc. But that's aggregated. It's not personal. Within marketing automation, you can see the personal results. So when we see Ross Jenkins coming in, we can see, hey, Ross has looked at this and this and this website or page of the website. He has clicked on those emails, etc. And if you combine that with the Google Analytics data, you have a really powerful insight. And that's what you do in this real-time dashboard like a Clipfolio or a Google Data Studio.
Well, if you even combine it with Stitch It with the data of a CRM, then you can really have a complete pipeline visualization, which is quite cool.
Really cool. Yeah.
Exactly. Instead of looking at 10 different dashboards, you could just look at one dashboard and be able to get all your numbers, reports. Yeah.
And it's not hard. The main important thing is that you can see it straight away. Because if you have to go in 10 different things, that costs a lot of time and effort. And usually people don't have it because the daily stuff is bogging them down. But then you forget things, and then you finally get the time to look at something, and then you've already lost a lot of money or missed opportunities. So a visualization, getting all this information together in one dashboard, and you can see straight away what's going right, but most importantly, what's going wrong.
The NASA invented that in 1960, where they had the launch control center.
Oh yeah,
Houston. So Houston, we have a problem, but that made us make that CMO control center. Or just Google for CMO control center, and you'll find it on our website. But it's something we really don't understand, that CMOs. That not all CMOs have that. You know, it's you really need to have that real-time insight into all those data sources straight away. But still, a lot of them have multiple logins, multiple emails coming in from all kinds of sources, etc., on a daily basis. So in the end, you don't have that oversight anymore. So that's why we, wrote that piece on the CMO Control Center.
Yeah, well, it fits also very good in this whole story of creating this raving fan database. That was the starting point for this podcast. But it all boils down to data. But the data are representations of your customers. The so-called customer journey, what we're all talking about. It's nice to talk about it, but how can you act on it? And therefore, you need a data, and therefore, you need a very good structure. What is what you just said? That database, that's really the foundation of the success. So can you tell a little bit more? So you got this raving fan database. So what do you do with it? What would you, you got the email address, how do you get that perfect engagement that they are turning into raving fans, because they won't start as a raving fan. Well, at least the majority of the B2B companies and smaller B2C companies, they're not starting as a fan. How do you make them fans?
Sure. So the best way is not spamming the people. If you've just opted in, say for instance, you've just given me your phone number, I'm not just going to keep spamming you with constant messages saying, hey, do you want to meet here? Do you want to meet here? Do you want to meet here? And giving you things that you're not related to. Or it's not relevant, you're not interested in. Instead, I'm going to nurture you. I'm going to say, hey, do you want to meet next week? But I'm not going to keep bugging you and annoying you. Think about it as a friendship basis. I'm going to speak to you maybe once a week, once every fortnight at the max, and I'm going to give you relevant information. I'm not just going to keep selling to you or asking you to do things for me. Instead, I'm going to start building a friendship. I'm going to do things for you. If you send me an email and say, hey, I'm looking for this product specifically, or this is what I'm looking for, I'll communicate with you. Instead of just constant selling and selling, no one wants to be sold to 24/7. They want to build a relationship.
And how do you distinguish the contacts that say, well, let's keep it cool, you know, don't be too pushy. And the other context is that, well, this is great. I want more. I want to binge. I'm a Netflix fan, so I like the series, so I want to see the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So how do you distinguish that, and how can you keep both happy?
Sure. So it's about building a target audience, what you have in your head. Say, for instance, you release a new product every month. And every month, you only have 1,000 of these products. You want them all to sell out within, let's say, 10 minutes. So you're building an active fan base every month. You're sending these emails out, maybe showing teasers of this product. Instead of hard selling, or asking them to pre-buy. You're building a relationship, showing them who built it maybe, and showing sort of your passion, where you've made it from or what it's made from. Giving people an insight into your business is one of the biggest assets or one of the biggest things you can do. It keeps people interested, keeps people going. Instead of acting like we're this big corporate company when you're a one-man band, act like Ross or act like Elias, and you know, be yourself in the email.
Okay. How do you, if I'm very fond of things, how do you give me the possibility? Does your marketing automation take care of that?
Sure. That
Elias is more in the say, well, I'm interested, but you don't have to send me a lot of mails. I'll be wandering around whilst I'm very keen on that product because I've got a problem that your product will solve for me. So I want to know more faster. So
maybe the best way would be using logic basics and saying, okay, Elias has opened 5 of the past emails. He hasn't clicked on any link. He hasn't replied to any email. Why don't we reach out to Elias and say, what are you looking for specifically? What do you want in this product? Or maybe what's the reason why you haven't purchased it as of yet? Even then, it maybe gives you the opportunity to give a discount code out. That's something that a lot of companies miss out, or they just email out and forget about discount codes completely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think, is there something like a last tip that you would like to share with us, Ross, on this building the list with the raving fans before we end this podcast?
Yeah, for sure. So I think one of the main things about building the list is specifically just be yourself in the email. Write about yourself. Write about what your passions are, the business that you're building, what you're aiming to achieve. Instead of just constantly selling to people, give them an insight into your business, into your life. I'm not asking you to tell them about your relationship problems or anything like that. Write about what you're looking for and what you're looking to build. People will love the open, transparent, honesty part of you, and it'll build you a lot of relationships with customers where later down the line, maybe not in a couple of days, maybe in a couple of weeks, they'll purchase from you and they'll be raving fans from there on.
Thank you, Ross, for this good insights into building this list. We'll put your contact details in the show notes. So it's Ross Jenkins from digitalme.cc. He can be reached on LinkedIn. I'll put in everything in the show notes. And we'll be in touch. Thank you, Ross.
Perfect. Thank you, Ross, for having me, guys.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our iTunes channel. Also, if you want to be interviewed on this podcast, or if you have any questions on marketing technology, send me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. Thank you.